You're in the middle of nowhere, with the day fading to a pale band on the horizon. From the descending dark, a bus pulls up, brightly lit inside, but with no name, no destination. The door shuttles open before you. There is no driver. Do you climb aboard? Of course you do. It's why you're here. Welcome to the Gray Line. Today's journey will take us into a remote quadrant of the Indian Ocean, to a ring of tiny islands known, to the very few people who've ever seen them, as either the Mnemba Atoll or Project Pandora, a highly classified playground of the world's top scientists, fueled by unfettered ambition and funded by bottomless defense budgets. What could possibly go wrong? Perhaps you'd best ask that question to the man slumped there in the back of the bus, his coveralls spattered with blood, his eyes haunted by things no one should ever see, his ears deaf from the screams of his co-workers and the roaring of the dinosaurs. But perhaps we're getting ahead of ourselves. See, at places like Project Pandora, where playing God is just part of the job description, the important question isn't, will life find a way? No, the important question is, how heavy are the doors? Because global catastrophe is statistically inevitable when the only thing separating two volatile experiments is ego and the gray line.
Everyone else called it the Guardian because, of course...
Lang's words come in a hushed staccato monotone as she hurries through the buzzing red gloom.
They were all Star Trek nerds without an original thought between them.
She sounds almost as if she's talking to herself. She might as well be, considering how little I know about any of it. I follow her into a junction where she turns left, barely sparing a glance at the dead technician, half-eaten, lying on a smear of dried blood and three-toed footprints. The emergency lights are sparse but steady, powered by isotope batteries that will last another 1,000 years, according to her.
I called it what it is.
She goes on, ducking beneath a half-collapsed ceiling and a disgorge of black conduit.
What it was when I first sketched it on the back of a logbook. It's the focus. It's actually spelled with a PH and a Q, because it's an acronym. It changes the tenor of it in your mind, knowing that.
I try to imagine it spelled that way. P-H-O-Q-U-S. Focus. After a moment, I shake my head. Still ducking, she waves her wrist at a half-obscured vault door. A sonorous chime sounds, and the vault door rolls halfway open before grinding to a halt. Deep in the bowels of the wall, an engine grinds and buzzes, then cuts out with a clank. A burst of sparks blinds both of us for a second. Lang glances back at me. I'm fine, I say, holding up my hands.
I'm not worried about your welfare. I just wanted to make sure you were still there.
She needs me, she said. I swallow hard at the flinty strain in her gaze, the faint jitter of barely restrained panic behind her glasses. She shimmies through the door, and I follow. It's much darker here, and broader, with high concrete walls entirely featureless. Our footsteps echo. I pat my pockets, feeling for my cell phone to turn on the flashlight app. Old habit. Cell service died a few days after Thanksgiving, and the main power failed shortly after that. My name's Harp. I worked in security, mostly up on the shipping deck until my boss was eviscerated by a Nothro. I didn't see it happen. I just saw Drummond's feet sticking out of the guard booth. When I went around to look, the hairy little bugger was still on top of him, its head buried in his fat purple entrails, wriggling its tail back and forth as it rooted and grunted beneath his ribs. Drummond was staring up at the booth ceiling with this weird little smile like he was half remembering a joke.
Triple pay for skeleton crew duty.
The Owen Corporation suits had promised when everyone else had evacuated.
Just until they get the incursion locked down and bring back the full staff.
That had been mid-November. The few of us that stayed celebrated with freeze-dried turkey and powdered potatoes in the commissary and laughed about being back up to speed by the time the candy canes and tinsel went up. Skeleton crew, they'd called us. Just us and the bio-reclamation squad over in genetic engineering. Now, Drummond was one of the skeletons. The bio-rec team was mostly eaten, and the incursion was a complete overrun. I'd spent the last 3 weeks locked in an incubation vault, eating protein gel packs and bags of chips from the busted vending machine in the monitor room. I could hear the dinosaurs out in the complex sometimes, heavy footsteps and those terrible hungry screams. But I never went out to check, never unsealed the door, never so much as peeked through the porthole. I didn't really have much of a plan. But then Lang found me.
I can't do it by myself,
she'd told me through the intercom, standing bold as brass out in the main corridor, peering in through the smeared glass.
I need another body.
Find somebody else, I insisted, hating how it sounded. I'm no scientist, I'm just a yellow tag. I scan wrist chips and tell pilots to thumbprint the manifest.
There isn't anyone else.
Her voice was flat and tinny through the speaker.
Security, the bio-rec squad, they're all dead, or hiding way better than you. You have to do it.
That was a little over an hour ago. She walks now into the descending shadows, and I sense the floor slanting away before us, taking us down into the cool depths of the crater floor. I've never been this far into the complex. Only blue tags are allowed this far. Something screams behind me. The sound is inhuman, furious, ululating. My blood goes cold and my knees buckle even as I try to bolt. I stagger against a cold concrete wall, boggling around at the dark. Lang turns so fast that her hair whips like a corona. I can just see the glint of her glasses, the flick of her eyes. Her arm is raised, and something is clasped in her hand. It looks like a TV remote, but smaller, with only two buttons. They glow green, partly obscured by her ready thumb. The scream doesn't repeat. After a few breathless seconds, a clatter and crash sounds. Something darts away into the darkness, all scrabbling claws and chittering growl and the high stink of dinosaur urine.
Nothronychus,
Lang exhales.
It's marking where it saw us. It'll be back with the rest of its brood soon enough. We have to move.
She turns again and hurries into the descending black. One of those things ate my boss, I say, feeling stupid with fear.
They've multiplied like rats since the incursion,
Lang observes, her voice echoing from the high ceiling.
No natural predators.
She raises the remote in her hand, brandishes it so I can see.
Neural interrupter. All the dinosaurs had inhibitors implanted on their brainstems. The Nothros have bred too much for it to be of much use now, but it still works on the bigger, older animals. Fortunately, most of them broke out into the island proper.
She pauses and then adds in a darker voice.
Or got drawn into the focus. It calls to them somehow. They migrate to it, like moths to a candle.
I follow her so closely that I nearly step on her heels. She doesn't much look like a blue tag anymore. She's traded her lab coat for jeans and a Kevlar shell. Her hair hangs in dirty fronds. To fill the silence, I prattle. I read about the focus when it first came online. Most expensive scientific trial in history, they said, and the largest. Lang scoffs.
Makes the genetic engineering wing look like a junior high biology class. Breeding dinosaurs from recombinated DNA. That's not science, it's genetic tinker toys.
The scorn in her voice could melt chromium.
The focus. Now that's true science. The quantum entanglement manufactory alone takes up 12 miles of tunnels around and under all three islands. The refraction arrays use more diamonds than have been sold as jewelry in the entirety of human history, bankrupted half of the governments that funded us.
Lang's pace quickens as she speaks, as if the words fuel her.
And the kicker was that no one knew for sure that it would work until everything was totally complete. Every wire connected, every beam calibrated, every particle accelerator tuned to a millionth of a micron, every single domino had to be in exactly the right place or the entire house of cards would be doomed.
I frown. That would have been bad, right? My eyes have adjusted enough to the gloom to see Lang nod meaningfully. Her voice is a dark hush.
Worse than any of us were willing to admit.
Like the whole thing blows up?
Like a few thousand square kilometers of ocean became radioactive death for the next few thousand years.
She shakes her head curtly, still stalking forward.
It was enough of a risk that when it came time to push the button, there was serious concern that the International Union would pull the plug, kill the whole project. I was prepared, though. There was no way I was about to let them stop history. My history.
I cough a little. But, like, weren't they right? Things didn't turn out so rosy around here, you know. She stops and rounds on me so suddenly that I stumble a little to avoid running into her pointing finger.
The focus is perfect! It was the genetics division that ruined everything, just like I predicted. They lost control of the facility and everybody spooked. You see these venting chambers?
She throws out both hands to encompass the concrete corridor around us.
These were built as safeguards in case of catastrophic diffusion, not as escape hatches. But when all their precious genetic monstrosities got loose, started breaking all the cordons, what's the first thing the genetics crews do? They blow all my vent doors and run out, leaving the focus completely vulnerable to the outside. The focus never failed. It was those dinosaur breeders and pure stupid human panic that ruined my life's work.
This strikes me as a little overstated, but I don't debate her. She's the one who's invented the damn thing, after all, or discovered it, or whatever. She's the brains behind Owen Corporation's whole experimental dimensional engineering section. She deflates a little, visibly calms herself, then turns on her heels and stalks on again. I follow, but not as closely as before. We pass through an opening, a sense that we are entering an even larger passageway. It's completely dark, except for a dusky glow far ahead, lost in fog. My voice sounds small in the cavernous space. So why are you still here? Shouldn't they have sent a rescue transport for you?
They think I'm dead.
She answers flatly. Why do they think that?
Because that's what I told them.
Her voice echoes up into the high darkness, rings forward and back as we hurry on. She continues in a lower tone, suddenly exhausted.
I forged an email from Rector's account telling everyone that poor Dr. Lang had been killed. I don't want them coming back here. The last thing I need is to be rescued.
I blink hard, trying to understand. But why not?
Because they'd try to stop me again.
She declares wearily.
And I can't let them.
She doesn't stop walking as the fog begins to lighten to a pearly translucence, but she does look back at me over her shoulder.
Do you know why we're here? What'd you say your name was?
Harp, ma'am.
Do you know why we're here, Harp?
I shrug.
We're here to shut the focus down. For good.
I nod. I figured it would be that, ma'am, or the complete opposite. But why?
Because every day, unattended, it spawns new dimensional portal points across the spectrum of causality. There were 16,000 on the day the incursion occurred, when the first dinosaurs broke loose from the genetics division.
I nod again and frown. How many are there now? She actually laughs a little.
Last I checked, there were nearly 780,000. Unchecked, they're spawning exponentially, you see. If we don't shut the whole thing down...
I wait. When she doesn't seem prepared to continue, I prod, "What? What happens?" She shrugs a little helplessly.
The focus will undergo phase change and expand to its next fractal state. In a trillionth of a second, its gravity attenuation will grow from around 40 meters in radius to something akin to the orbit of Jupiter.
I frown, not comprehending. And what will happen to the Earth?
Same thing that will happen to the rest of the solar system, Harp. It'll compress through the focus, inverting as raw matter into whatever time or dimension is currently attuned.
She laughs again. It's a hollow sound.
Early on, there was speculation that that's how the Big Bang actually happened. Some other Earth, some other version of the focus that went haywire, like this one's about to, and boom, 10 quadrillion tons of elemental matter appearing in random space out of apparent nothing.
As we progress toward the center of the crater, huge looming shapes become just visible through the lightening fog. I begin to sense the scale of the space we are entering. It's as massive as a football stadium, carved roughly from the very rock of the crater. Once, a tensor shield had kept out the outside air and elements, but it's deactivated now, or broken, leaving only the starless dome of the sky high above. Clotted with clouds, it looks down from the circular walls like a black, unblinking eye. In the center of the crater is a stone floor, graded flat but laced with uneven striations. And in the center of this is a pair of strange objects, large, but still dwarfed by the terraced crater all around. Standing upright and facing each other is a set of what look like massive oblong lenses, glowing with faint purple light that brightens to a blinding arc around their edges. They pulse in irregular patterns, and with each pulse, sparks twitch and flicker between them. Dull light shimmers there, faintly illuminating a monumental river of wires, conduit, pipes, and battery pumps. Positioned near the lenses, but behind a thick plexi blast shield, is a control booth decked with screens and interface sensor panes. The booth sits atop a ribbed rubber mat, as if to ground it. I gawk, having never seen any of this before. Lang approaches the lens array. Each lens is three times her height, set perhaps 60 feet apart. As I move cautiously closer, I sense, rather than see, the shimmering beam between them. It's a deep purple, like the last light of dusk, but pulsing and flickering randomly, snapping at dust particles and the occasional insect as they drift between the lenses, only to be tensed away into one of the endless portal points throughout all of space-time. I know enough to know that the focus was meant to be the first ever attempt at matter teleportation. It was going to completely revolutionize human civilization and development, at least according to the Owen suits, from travel and commerce to exploration and ethics. Only the focus had worked a little too well. Is it true, I ask Lang, my voice unconsciously hushed, that it focuses across time as well as space? Lang shakes her head and blows out a tired sigh.
It focuses across time, space, and even dimensions. It connects to some places so alien, so fundamentally foreign to our reality, that one glimpse would strip your brain of all rational thought.
I consider this and look into the faint purple shimmer. How do you know that? She glances aside at me, as if measuring my willingness to really hear the answer.
We sent astronauts through first. Some never came back, but one of them did. He was drooling, he didn't blink, he stumbled and fell over dead. Right about where we're standing. At the autopsy, they found that he was perfectly healthy. His heart had just stopped.
Heart attack? I venture, almost hopefully.
When they took his brain out, it was perfectly smooth.
She looks at me over her glasses.
Shrunken and smooth as a cue ball. Every neural wrinkle and fold, every memory, every synaptic connection, all completely erased. His heart had stopped beating because his brain had forgotten how to tell it to.
I shudder. She moves to the booth, leaving me there by the lenses and the purple shimmer.
Stay there,
she calls, slipping her hands beneath an interface pane.
I'll tell you what to do when I need you to do it.
I shift on my feet. My knees are shaking, watery. I glance back the way we'd come, but I can't see the mouth of the tunnel. I know that more tunnels are all around us, in every direction. According to Lang, the tunnels, what she called venting chambers, have all been opened to the outside. What do you need me to do? I say, struggling to keep my voice even.
Go stand in the focus beam, but don't cross it.
I turn my head to look at her, my eyes bulging. She's moving her hands under the interface pane, waking the monitors, cycling the computers to life. Go and stand in the focus beam? I remember what she said when she found me hiding in the incubation chamber. I need another body. You want me to do what? I manage. She glances up at me and then rolls her eyes impatiently.
I need you to stand on the threshold, but don't cross it. It only works as a portal if you go through it, understand? If you just stand there intersecting the beam, you won't go anywhere, but you will lock the cycle into place. Pause it, so I can tune in all the other portal points.
I stare at her, unmoving from the spot on the stone floor. She presses her lips into a line, looks away from me, and then back. She doesn't move her hands from the sensor panes.
The focus is always on,
she explains with deliberate patience.
But it's random. It cycles through 70 to 100 portal points per second. Once a living body intersects the beam of the focus, it locks the cycle into stasis. If you stand in the beam without crossing over, you'll allow me to manually link into every existing portal point at once. When I have them all active, I will come and take your place. Understand?
I nod, although it feels like a lie. What did you call it? This critical mass of portal points before the next big jump in size? How close are we to reaching it? She stares at me with apparently Herculean patience.
My guess is that the expansion event will occur at a little over 1 million portals.
I nod again. So we're pretty close to that? Lang takes a deep breath through her nose before answering. She nods once, curtly.
Given the current rate of expansion, I'd say we have less than an hour. Probably much less. Harp, I'm asking you in the name of humanity. Go intersect the focus, but don't pass through it. Like I said, the focus has its own gravity. It will pull you. Do not give into it.
She pauses, then adds a little awkwardly.
You can do this. I believe in you.
I'm almost embarrassed by her condescending attempt at encouragement. That, more than anything, is what gets me moving. I approach the soft glow of the focus. It emits an almost sub-audible hum, so deep and throbbing that it's a vibration in my guts. It tickles, but not in a pleasant way. I glance back at Lang. She's watching me intently from the control booth, her hands motionless beneath the sensor panes. I narrow my eyes. Once all the portal points are active, you say you'll switch places with me. Why? She doesn't blink.
Have you ever heard of non-baryonic dark matter?
I shake my head. You're the scientist. She nods.
My intention is to break connection with all the focus portals at once. When that happens, the waveform will collapse, and there will be an explosive feedback of quantum diffusion. That's what the vent tunnels were built for.
And what about whoever is standing in the focus beam when that happens? Lang doesn't answer. She doesn't need to. Without looking away from her, I take a deep breath and step slowly backward into the focus. The effect is instantaneous, but as soft as a moth's wing. I feel a new space open up just to my rear left, beckoning me, tugging me gently into its embrace. It suggests a warmer world than the cold crater floor, and lighter somehow. There's music nearby. I don't recognize it. It's foreign. A mariachi band, maybe. I imagine a little hacienda on the edge of the Yucatan Peninsula. I could simply cross over the focus and find out for sure. The curiosity assails me. It consumes my thoughts, but I resist it, remembering Lang's instructions. Don't cross the focus. Interrupt the beam, but stay there. Lock it in stasis while she links into the rest of the focus points. I can still see her, but with difficulty. It isn't that my vision is obscured by the focus. The effect is subtle, almost a caress, merely a pinkish fog in my peripheral vision. And yet, it's increasingly hard to concentrate. I hear voices speaking in Spanish. I smell something. Fire? Hot embers in a stone hearth? There is a hint of laughter. Is it coming from the now, or is this something from the distant past? The urge to find out is intense. My heel pushes backward on the stone floor. I edge deeper into the focus, my shoulders tense, trying to push out into the other side, but no. I firm my resolve, and then, with a faint pop and a ringing in my ears, another portal point presses into the resonance of the focus. This one is further away, colder, a Siberian morning perhaps, with ice crystals on tundra. It's less pleasant than the first one, and yet it still exerts its own powerful pull. I sense that I am in the transition point, the crossing place. Humans aren't supposed to stay here. The focus is simply a doorway, meant to be passed through and forgotten. I force myself to stay, to block the doorway, to fill it and darken its draw. I struggle to concentrate. I strain to see Lang in the control booth. Her hands move quickly, operating the Owen computers, bringing them under her influence. More portal points open in the focus beam, and in my mind, they tug at me, two of them, then five, then 16, then 200. The pressure of them becomes exponentially more intense. I feel like I'm being stretched. I firm my footing, press my boots into the reassuring rock of the floor. My senses tell me that I'm standing in a gale, pressed by something like vertigo, to lean back, to tumble across the focus and into any one of the thousand portal points that now yawn all around me. There are 10,000 of them, 100,000. Each one is a fishhook screwed into my body, tugging with irresistible force, pulling me in every direction at once, stretching me into oblivion. I hear my own voice call hoarsely, desperately.
Hang on, Harp!
Lang's voice is impossibly distant, a bell chiming from a dark, distant valley. I wonder, even in the maelstrom of growing force all around, is she telling the truth? Am I just her guinea pig? Her placeholder? A small price sacrificed on the altar of science? Am I willing to be that sacrifice? A dark star in the solar center of my mind whispers, no. Hundreds of thousands of portal destinations scream in my brain, pull me in every direction. I am being unmade one cell at a time. I can't bear it for another moment. But then, Lang is there. She is screaming into my face, and yet I can't hear her. In her left hand is an odd black object, irregular and heavy. Her right hand reaches toward me. I read her shouting lips.
Take my hand!
I reach out of the focus beam, both with stony reluctance and frantic desperation. She grasps my hand, begins to pull me forward. Her tug feels as light as a lover's embrace. And yet I can see that she is straining with all her strength. Simultaneously, she turns herself, revolving around the axis of our clasped hands, moving in a slow, exhausting dance. She is replacing me in the focus beam, seamlessly. The tidal force of the beam releases me gradually, and I begin to fall out of its influence. I stumble. The stone floor rises up to meet me, and I realize, without caring, that I'm falling. I catch myself, but clumsily, reeling in a fugue of weakness. I struggle to roll over, to right myself, and look up. Lang now stands in the pulse of the focus. It snaps and arcs all around her, a blinding barrage of energy. The thing in her left hand is a chunk of what looks like volcanic rock, chipped like quartz wherever it isn't curved and glassy smooth. It's the blackest thing I've ever seen. She closes her right hand against the rock and then hugs it to her chest. Her eyes are straining to see me through the purple glare.
Go!
She screams at me, and I barely hear it. The rock in her hands seems to glow black, as if sucking the purple light into itself like a miniature but growing black hole. She called it non-baryonic dark matter. I still don't know what that is, but I know this. It is rejected by the focus. The beam's power is blunted against it, nullified, canceled instantly. I clamber back from the increasing force, but can't seem to tear my eyes from it. The Focus' deep throb has risen to a piercing whine. It drills into my ears like an ice pick, and yet the pitch continues to rise. The volume seems to double by the second. I realize, with a clinical stab of panic, that if Lang succeeds, we will both die. There is no way for me to escape in time. I'm not prepared for this. The rock in her hand is a black beacon, somehow blinding in force. The purple beam wars with it, annihilates against it. Lang seems to thin and shimmer, nearly torn apart by the opposing energies and the endless, hungry portals. The floor is shaking. A tremor vibrates the world, irregular and thrumming like 100 heavy footfalls pounding, coming closer. I force myself to my feet and realize that I am terrified, and yet the fear is almost clinical, existential. I am no hero. Not like Lang. Her fingers are tense, white bars caging the black stone, our salvation and end. I approach her, reach for the stone, tentatively, my own hand shaking weakly. Even in the midst of the riot of purple turbulence, she sees. She shakes her head, fighting the inertia. She screams no, silent against the whining shriek of the Focus. My courage is forfeit. I've become too accustomed to merely surviving. It's an impossible addiction. My fingers brush the dark rock, the obliterator of the portal points, the anchor that holds Lang to this time and place, preventing her from being torn into a million directions. I touch its icy surface, the thing that will kill both of us if I let it. But then I pause, listening. The floor is still thrumming beneath my feet, and I realize that it doesn't just feel like running footfalls. Shapes thunder out of the darkness, barrel through the fog, screaming with elongated, toothy jaws, streaming ugly hanks of gray hair. The Nothronychus brood is at least a dozen strong. Two dozen. They see the blinding glare of the Focus and angle instantly toward it, their eyes flashing flat purple, their tongues lashing their teeth. I back away, trip over my own feet, fall hard again to the stone floor. Lang turns her head. It seems to take monumental effort. Her jaw unhinges in a scream of mingled fear and rage. She clutches the black stone even harder against her chest. The Nothronychus scream right back, pelting into the light of the Focus, aiming directly into it. And I suddenly understand that they are not running to catch prey. They are stampeding away from a much larger threat. The hulking shape that emerges behind them is 20 feet tall, loping heavily on massive, scaly feet. Its claws dig scars into the stone floor. When it roars, the sound is a tonal bass counterpoint to the high whine of the Focus. It's a Majungasaurus. The spines along its back undulate like a snake as it runs, closing in on the fleeing Nothros. I scramble backwards, crab-walking in atavistic terror, unable to look away but clumsy with panic. My hand bumps something on the floor. It clatters. It's the remote thing that Lang wielded in the tunnel, what she called the neural interrupter. I scramble after it. It skitters away from my frenzied grasp. The first Nothronychus intersects the Focus, bypasses Lang, and vanishes in a blinding pink flash. An instant later, two more follow. Lang screams. I can hear her because the Focus relents slightly every time a Nothro crosses it. Six more flash through the beam in quick succession, vanishing into a dozen times and places. The stone in Lang's hand pulses with each flash, losing power. I see that as the Nothros cross over into multiple portal points, those points detune from the beam. Perhaps dozens wink shut with each passage, perhaps hundreds. Lang's plan is falling apart, cascading exponentially with each crossing beast. And still, she stays in the beam, faltering, sinking to her knees as the Nothros thunder past her, vanishing into dozens or hundreds of portals all at once, just mists of dinosaur blood, flesh, and bone spreading over untold times and places. I scramble for the remote, stealing panicked glances at it, barely able to tear my eyes from the looming Majungasaurus. It roars again, lowering its head to strike, its spied laying in the beam, imprisoned there like a fly in a web. Its eyes glint, and it swivels its head sideways, preparing to take her in one bite. I raise the remote, point it wildly, and slam the buttons with the palm of my free hand. Lang collapses half out of the beam, leaving only her feet to interrupt it. She raises an arm to ward off the rampaging dinosaur. The Majungasaurus stumbles suddenly, nearly collapses on top of Lang, skids and scrambles as the neural interrupter buzzes to life in its brain, scrambling its thoughts. The monster snaps at the air, rolls its eyes, slews into the focus directly over Lang's prone body. Confused and maddened, it looks down at her. It growls, a deep razor rasp of mad fury. It strikes, biting off her raised arm at the elbow. She screams and scrambles back, withdraws her amputated arm, leaving an arc of blood glittering against the roiling pink of the focus. The Majungasaurus raises its head, gulps its jaw, and Lang's forearm drops whole down its gullet. And in that instant, I see that the Dark Matter stone is still clutched in her disembodied hand, vanishing down the dinosaur's gullet. On the floor in front of me, Lang rolls over and clutches her head with her remaining arm. Blocked completely by the gigantic shape of the Majungasaurus, the focus whine increases to a deafening trill. The dinosaur squeals suddenly in pain. It contorts against the blinding force, writhes, bulges obscenely, and then, with terrific finality, it explodes. The million pieces blast outward in a million directions, a cloud of blood, skin, bone, and teeth. Then they halt in midair, a constellation of gore caught in the stalemate between inertia and quantum gravity. After a fraction of an instant, the pieces contract again. They implode into a brilliant point of black, which hovers for a split second in the pale glow of the focus, and then falls to the stone floor with a clank. The Dark Matter stone rolls, rocks, and comes to a halt. Lang raises her head, peers through the strew of her matted hair. The remote falls out of my numb hand. My face feels warm. Only later, on the transport off the island, will I see the beet-red radiation burn that has baked my face and the backs of my hands. Lang tries to push herself to her feet. She fails, falls back to her hands and knees. Her diminished arm pumps blood in weak spurts. She curses it under her breath.
"What's your name again?"
she wheezes.
"Harp, ma'am."
My voice sounds tiny, muffled, as if heard through wads of cotton batting.
"Harp, come into the control booth. Look at the middle screen."
"Ma'am," I say, not moving.
"We should get something for your arm."
"I'm too tired to argue, Harp. Go look at the screen."
She rolls onto her side and clutches her remaining fist around her bleeding bicep, partly staunching the flow. She hisses in pain through her teeth. I turn and trot to the booth. My legs are wobbly, but I will them to work. I glance around the computer array. The middle monitor is the largest. Lang's voice comes weakly.
"What's it say, Harp?"
I look at the screen. It says a lot of things. There are boxes and banks of words, scrolling lists of numbers, unintelligible geometric shapes blending from one to the other. Lang calls again, managing to sound annoyed.
"The middle field, Harp.
big display in the center of the screen. The number of existing portal points in the focus termination matrix.
I peer closer. I find the number. 62,008. I hear Lang sigh, then laugh painfully.
Well, we didn't shut it down forever, Harp. But we bought us some time.
I leave the booth and hurry to kneel over her.
Can you walk?
She nods.
There's a medical kit in the booth. It'll have conical gel. And a working sat phone. Let's get off this rock, Harp.
I nod enthusiastically and help her to her feet.
So, is everything all right now?
She sighs deeply, wearily, and shrugs her good shoulder.
No, but at least we'll have another few months, maybe. We did our part for now. And if I survive long enough, I'll be back to finish the job.
She looks aside at me. Her glasses have fallen off in the focus. Her eyes are dark brown.
What about you, Harp? Will you come back with me?
She smiles, a little ironically. I glance back over my shoulder at the dark matter stone glinting in the glow of the focus. I think about how to answer, then press my lips together and shake my head. I know my limitations. Slowly, she nods her understanding. 10 minutes later, her arm is coated with cauterizing gel and she's on the phone with a contact at the IU. 2 hours after that, we are in a transport, surrounded by 48 empty seats as the automatic pilot wends us east toward the dawning sun. Bright beams spear through the banks of windows, stinging like sunburn on my face and hands. I consider taking her remaining hand in mine. I decide that would be stupid. 4,000 miles away, a Vietnamese pedicab driver steps away from a noodle cart, buffs his hands on his shorts, and then stops. He squints at his pedicab. It is misted with the unmistakable crimson of blood. Red drops dribble down the handlebars, drip from the spoked wheels. He takes another step closer, and his squint becomes a frown of dismay and confusion. A huge, elongated jawbone, ringed with conical teeth and still bearing a snake-like tongue, lies on the seat. The torn lip is scaly and bearded with ugly gray stubble. He takes another cautious step forward, then yelps in surprise. A pair of broken eyeglasses fall out of the sky and land atop the jawbone.
An unusually optimistic, if temporary, reprieve at the end of today's journey. Will Dr. Lang return to Project Pandora in time to shut the focus down for good, thus saving the solar system from quantum apocalypse? The Gray Line offers no guarantees, but we do thank you for traveling with us. Please collect your luggage, should you have any, mind the closing doors, and do remember, not every journey ends so predictably. The next time you board with us, you may find yourself lost forever. Just one more tale told along the forgotten highways of the Gray Line. The Gray Line is written, recorded, and produced by yours truly, G. Norman Lippert. Harp's Forfeit featured the voice talent of Jeannie Lin as Dr. Lang. If you are enjoying The Gray Line, please do tell all of your friends and a few choice enemies. Be sure to subscribe for future episodes and leave a review on your favorite podcast app. I'd love to hear from you. Yes, you, Jeremy.